Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. We were anticipating talking a little bit of playoffs today, but we got a surprise Kobe Altman press conference, and there seems to be a lot of questions. So we thought this would be a great opportunity to take some questioners from our loyal listeners and kind of go through that, use that as a tool to discuss everything that was said in the press conference. Joining me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I was doing a lot better before I forgot to unmute you to start the show. We missed your first four words on YouTube, but don't you worry, our loyal listeners, the audio version will be correct, and I'm an idiot. So I was doing good. Sometimes like you kind of feel like you're cooking. I was pushing all the buttons to get us through our intro. I was feeling myself, and you can't ever feel yourself in this industry because I completely forgot to unmute us, and I'm mad about it now.
Irrational confidence is a hell of a thing. I'm working my way through a stomach bug, so you know what? This might be a little bit of my flu game.
It's going to be a burpee pod, gang.
I might be grosser than usual.
Let them rip.
And that's already a very high bar of grossness that I usually bring to the table. But as I mentioned, we do have a lot of listener questions, and I thought this was a really good opportunity to go over what was said in the press conference and kind of use that to answer some of the questions. So Connor had asked on Twitter if it was disingenuous for Kobe to say that they started the rebuild with an empty cupboard, given that they hadn't gone quote-unquote all-in because they held on to the Brooklyn pick. They also traded for younger players in Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance Jr., and Rodney Hood. Obviously, this is tied into the Athletic piece today by Jason Lloyd, who mentioned the fact that the Cavs didn't necessarily go all-in. So with that in mind, Carter, did you find that was a disingenuous statement?
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot between, you know, the actual statement, Jason Lloyd's follow-up in the actual presser, and then Jason's column within the Athletic. And I don't think the if there is a point where the Cavs have failed, it's not in like not acknowledging that their cupboard was full and that, you know, that they've failed because their cupboard was so full. I think if you're going to be critical of the Cavs of anything at that point, it's probably more that they overestimated how much they had in the cupboard. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that this was a team that very much was, I mean, I don't care who you ask, this was a team that after the year after the summer after LeBron left, they were like, we're going to take what's left and we're going to try to make a postseason run. And they had bad luck. Kevin Love fell apart before the season even started.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that. But, like, you know, I think that they certainly weren't as ready as they were. I do kind of take issue with the idea that the team should be much further along than they were after the first, after Decision 1.0 at this stage because they had done some planning. It's like, well, that version of the team also got really lucky. They hit Kyrie in the first draft. And and they had picks 1-4,
four again.
And obviously a few of those picks didn't work out, and you know, in the Deons and the Anthony Bents of the world, but like they had a much quicker road to insta contention, or you know, not even contention, but just being further along. So yeah, the cupboard was definitely more barren, but they got luckier. And I've said that a lot lately, but ultimately, I think it's a little like I don't understand the value in like going, but you did have Jordan Clarkson, as though Jordan Clarkson hasn't been like a meme among basketball intelligentsia for years.
Hey man,
and only really this season has started to garner legitimate respect. And guys like Clarkson, guys like Larry, they're good players. Don't get me wrong, but like they are not players you build a franchise around, that you start the next era of a franchise around. So yeah, they tried to be ahead of the game, but things didn't exactly break their way en route to that. I mean, I don't think that when they traded for that Brooklyn pick, assuming that, hey, we have a strong, and I'm now in pure speculation mode to be very clear, but if they had a strong inclination LeBron was leaving no matter what, and they said, hey, we need something to build around, no one thought the Nets pick was going to be eighth overall.
No.
It's cool that they found Colin Sexton there, but everyone thought that pick was going to be better. So it's like, I just don't get taking the issue, because really the issue is if you're going to criticize this team, it's for thinking they could contend after LeBron left with what was there. But even then, you know, we'll never know because Love got hurt 2 seconds into the season.
Yeah, and this was another case of, I think the aggregation of what Jason Lloyd said is worse than what he said. Like, I don't want this to be, we think that he's completely out of his mind, the points he brought up. What, when you read the actual article, the point that's brought up is that they didn't necessarily go all in. They didn't put all their chips to the center of the table, which... I mean, I'm still of the opinion, I said it at the time, I'll say it again now, I don't think there was anything that they could have got for those assets that would have put them over the hump and beat the Warriors that year. Like, I just...
If you'll recall, the number one name on the trade Brooklyn pick market was DeAndre Jordan.
Which, yeah.
Come on.
DeAndre Jordan came up, Kemba Walker came up at the draft, but I would assume at that point they probably already had a good idea that LeBron was leaving. And, I mean, we've seen some bad aggregation today as well. We saw that with the Terry Pluto comment of talking to two people around the league, one of whom was high on Sexton, the other one less so, that kind of felt that they should look into trading him, and that got aggregated into the Cavs are looking to trade Colin Sexton, which is a direct contradiction of what Kobe said. But I thought Lloyd's point was interesting, that they did trade for younger guys. I would argue that Clarkson, Nance, and Hood were all upgrades over what they had before. I felt that not only were they young options, Jay Crowder wasn't bringing anything to the table. Isaiah Thomas was a bad fit on and off the court. They got better at that point. They had a little bit of a bump after the trade deadline, but then those guys didn't stay healthy, right? Nance got hurt. Rodney Hood has been hurt. He got hurt that year, and he's been hurt pretty much every year of his career ever since. Clarkson, of course, is an interesting one. He was part of the rebuild for a while. Then eventually he was traded to open up an opportunity for Colin Sexton to have more usage, Kevin Porter Jr. at the time. That was kind of the primary motivation for moving him. The one thing that I will note is I think the thought going into 2018 was that they could do a little bit of what Toronto has done, which is remaining competitive while developing a second unit within the team, whether that be the quote-unquote young core at that point of Sexton, Clarkson, Nance, and Hood. I guess that would have been the young core that they were thinking of at the time. But then the direction of the team, that got decided for them when Kevin Love got hurt. There was no other option there. And yeah, the cupboard wasn't totally empty because they had those assets and they were able to convert those guys.
They flipped those assets mostly into positive value.
Right. They turned that into the 3 first-round picks and 13 second-round picks that the Cavs have traded for, which has helped replenish the cupboard, which I think was the right decision at the time.
And this is what I don't all the way understand here is, like, it just feels like if you're litigating that, you're just relitigating choices that were made 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I feel like we kind of know how things went, you know? I think we all kind of are... And maybe Jason Lloyd's of the opinion that the Cavs could have convinced LeBron to stay. I'm not, so that's why I'm a little less inclined to beat them up for, you know, looking towards the future, a.k.a. not trading the Brooklyn pick, because everything else... Come on, throw it out. Come on. Yeah. Everything else, they traded Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas for 3... rotation players.
Right. And there was an effort to trade for Paul George at the time that got vetoed by ownership. So, like, to your point, like, DeAndre Jordan was the name that was thrown out as the option for the pick. And I don't think DeAndre Jordan that year was going to be the difference between
Colin Sexton than DeAndre Jordan in 2018. Like, come on. You know, so I just kind of don't see the point. And it's weird because I think, you know, the people who are critical of this team also know they shouldn't be, you know, kind of thought they should be where they are. Mm-hmm. And shouldn't try to make a bunch of win now moves this season.
Right.
So, like, I don't know. I guess I'm just not super interested in relitigating 2018 because I think the Cavs were dealt a bad hand here.
Yeah.
You know, Kyrie forces his way out, in a pretty unparalleled, you know, unique fashion. The Cavs make a bad trade for a broken down Isaiah Thomas that, you know, we hoped he wasn't as broken down. So the on-court product suffers. We all know 2018 wasn't a fun year.
Yeah, but, like, and I think the discussion is just about defining what the starting point was for this team, which I think...
And I just don't care about that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's like whether you consider Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance, and Rodney Hood an empty cupboard or not. I just don't know if it's germane to, is the team heading in the right direction?
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like, I think the team might be heading in the right direction, but if I'm someone who is being critical of the Cavs, it would be the blowups, the drama that's kind of surrounded the team in spurts this season. Like, that's where I want to point my ire if I'm a frustrated fan or a frustrated viewer. So, like, I just don't understand relitigating how barren the cupboard was.
Yeah, and those guys played a crucial role in replenishing that cupboard. Like, George Hill got traded to Milwaukee, and you got the first round pick. The Jordan Clarkson trade brought back the other half of what they got Jared Allen for, which was Dante Exum, as well as second round picks that they now have. Like, you look at next year. I believe the Alec Burke trade was the one that got them Houston's second round pick next season, which is unprotected. That's a great asset because Houston has a 48% chance of losing their pick this year, and they're the worst team in the league. Like, they're going to be really bad next year, and that's going to be a really good cost-controlled asset to either bring in a player or to use it in a trade as you look to surround this team with length and athleticism, which was what Kobe Altman had identified as things that this team needs to put the young core in a better position to win, which kind of ties into the second question we got from Joe, which asked if the injuries are a valid explanation for the Cavs' struggles this year, given the fact that the roster has mostly been comprised of guys that have had some injury concerns. Dylan Windler missed last year. Kevin Love missed time. Love and Nance both missed 9 games the previous season, to be clear. And this year, Nance missed 37 games and Love missed 47 games.
Isn't it wild that Nance only missed 10 less games than Kevin? It does not feel like that. It feels like Nance only missed like 10.
Yeah, and even 20. At that, some of those games that Nance was playing later in the year were not at full health either. So I think the injuries, like the degree to which the injuries came, was a little bit more than you would have expected. Garland missed 6 games the year prior, 18 this year. Sexton missed 0 games over his first 2 seasons, missed 12 this year. And again, Nance and Love missed less than 10 games last season, and 37 and 47 for them this year.
This team lost probably near 100 games due to concussions. You know, like, that's not injury prone stuff. That's terrible luck. So I will say, to Joe's point, you know, I do think there is a degree of, if you're counting on Larry and Kevin to be completely healthy or your season is in trouble, then yeah, I guess you're probably asking, you're putting a lot on those guys, because they, even given their health, they are guys who get banged up.
Yeah.
Historically. So, like, sure, I get it. I just think if this is one of those boring counter arguments or even answers where it's like, to what degree is it a valid excuse? Because to me, it is relatively valid in the sense that you probably should not count on those guys to stay healthy. I also don't think you should have counted on the position group as a whole to miss a season's worth of games.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. The other thing I'll point out is just what this season was, how condensed it was. I mean, the second half schedule wasn't even figured out until the second half, and that was congested. Like, the wear and tear on the players was a lot. I do think that there is some room to kind of consider this, though. Like, when you're looking at next year, Love and Nance, like, they are still under contract. They're going to be playing a role next year, but how many games are they going to miss? I think that that's something that needs to go in the equation when teams are making big offers for Larry Nance Jr. But Brian Windhorst mentioned last week that teams are still offering multiple first-round picks. Kevin Love, we don't know how available he's going to be. That's been a key part of the arguments that we've had in the past about how aggressive they should be in looking for a replacement. I think you hope that under a normal year, normal amount of time off, They're going to have time to rest, recover, maybe work on their bodies. Coby Altman had mentioned that he expects Kevin Love to do more kind of weight training and preparing his body for the season rather than past seasons where he's kind of used it for rest and recovery, just being a little more aggressive in working on his body. Hopefully Torian Prince, if he's still with the team, that he can stay healthier and play a role, because he's one of those guys that can add spacing, defense, athleticism to the lineup. But I do think as they look for ways to take that next step, you do have to consider the injury risk here. You have to consider the fact that these guys may not be available. And for a young team that needs chemistry and continuity, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I think that's fair, though. I am always on team, like, upside. Like, you know, I've not been shy about this. I'd rather have a really good player 80% of the time than a pretty good player 100% of the time.
Right.
And I think that if you feel the opposite way, I don't think that's wrong. It's just kind of a personal preference. I think if it's me, if I'm building this team and I have a backup power forward, I have two backup power forwards that know my system, that I've been developing the crap out of, in Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens. So to me, I'm not... Are you eye-rolling Lamar Stevens?
No, I was just trying to follow you. When you said two backup power forwards, I thought you were referring to Love and Nance.
No, you jerk. I've got two guys that are in the... That are, you know, especially Dean Wade, that are kind of ready to step up and contribute and fill the kind of roles that are needed there,
mm-hmm.
and that are cost-controlled and locked up. So it's like... I'm not as much in a hurry to upgrade those position groups, because I think that we've seen this team play good basketball with Dean Wade at the four. Yep. We've seen this team play good basketball with Lamar Stevens at the four. And ultimately, I just think there's other places that I want to upgrade more. Now, if you can find I think this is actually more of a draft decision.
I was just about to bring that up.
Than a free agency or trade decision, because... Let's say the Cavs don't get the lottery luck and they're picking fifth or sixth or seventh. You know, you look at someone like a Scotty Barnes and you go, you know, we do have two power forwards that expect good minutes. This might tilt my calculus a little bit, where mm-hmm. I go, normally, if I'm just looking at a depth chart, I see Love, Nance. I go, okay, power forward's taken care of. With that added variable, I'm a little more interested, obviously, also with, you know, the drama with Kevin the past couple years, also another variable here. But that's the only place I really see it factoring into my decision, because the Cavs actually don't have that much flexibility to go spend a ton of money at a position. So I'm not gonna go invest a ton of assets in a position that I think is pretty all right, where I have some black holes elsewhere.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And honestly, I never even factored in Lamar Stevens as kind of a small ball four option next year. But you're right.
I don't think he's a three until he can shoot.
Yeah, I actually think that that's a really smart observation. And it's going to be tricky, because you look at this draft, Cade Cunningham, you kind of figured him to be a Jason Tatum-like forward, where he can play the three or the four, especially with you being high on the core four at this point. Garland, Sexton, Okoro, you want to get those guys as many minutes as possible, so he might play some minutes at the four. Evan Mobley, likely a four. Scotty Barnes, likely a four. Jalen Johnson, likely needs to play at the four.
Yeah, there's really only two dudes that the Cavs are going to take on the wing.
Mm-hmm.
It's Cade and Jalen, right? Green, that is.
Oh, yeah. Jalen Green would be one of them. I guess Moses Moody.
Moses Moody is certainly a...
He's a wing.
I think he's a two. That's
ooh, that's a little spicy.
That's a take. I think he's a Rodney Hood guy, where he's not super explosive
mm-hmm.
at the three. And so he looks like a three when you just look at him, but then when you see him play... He seems like more of a two, but that's also as uneducated of an opinion as you can get. I've only watched a few breakdowns of him, but there's just a little like those tall guys who don't have big hops, who aren't vertical players at all. I always kind of look at and go, maybe, and I feel this way about Jetty, frankly. That's actually a good kind of counter there, which is if you're not gonna be physically imposing, it might be better to use your length to your advantage against smaller players. Anyway, those are really the only wings I see them taking. I think it's maybe more likely they end this draft with a 4 than with a 3.
Yeah, that's not the worst take. Like, it does seem like,
because if they don't get first overall, Cade's off the board.
Yeah, that man, that's going to, it's going to be really tricky how you navigate that, because, and this was a big qualifier in the press conference as well with Kobe, where he's made it very clear, hey, we're excited about the core four. We feel like we have long-term fits with them. We want to build around them. We want to supplement them. But they're also excited at the opportunity to add another player to that young core. And until that player is clear, like until they know where they're drafting, there's a lot of questions. Like, it's going to have a ripple effect up and down the roster when it comes to how are you going to use your mid-level exception? What type of players are you going to pursue in trades or in free agency? Like, there's so many things that are impacted about where they draft, and that might go into the calculus of how you approach a situation if you get approached with a big offer from Larry Nance, or how aggressively you pursue a trade for Kevin Love. Like,
this is one spot where I'm really glad that the NBA has their draft before free agency.
Oh, my God. No kidding. And this is also a spot where I'm really glad that I just have to talk about a team and not make these decisions, because this is not easy stuff. Tyler had asked, and this ties into what we're talking about, what the starting lineup would look like if the Cavs drafted Scottie Barnes or Jalen Green. I've got a little bit of a take here, and I wonder what your thoughts are, Carter. So my take is, I think those guys are coming off the bench year one. Like, I think there's a chance Larry would still be starting at the four and Scottie would be coming in off the bench. I think that playmaking with the second unit that he can bring to the table would be really good. You also probably want to stagger him in a core as much as possible.
You have to say what happens to Kevin Love in this situation. Is it a buyout or something?
He might.
Like, you can't just say, you just can't, like,
well, he might
have
start
him on the roster.
He might start. He might start, or it could be Larry. I think it would be one of them over Scottie Barnes. I do think you'd probably have to get more aggressive in looking for a different home for one of those guys. But I'd probably bring Scottie Barnes off the bench. The playmaking with the second unit, his shooting isn't going to be as much of an issue. And you want to stagger him with Okoro. Like, those two out there, unless Okoro takes a big leap as a shooter, which is possible.
I kind of don't want to stagger him. I just want to destroy worlds defensively.
Who knows? Maybe Okoro makes a leap. Maybe Okoro makes a leap, but I'm just not going to count on that, you know? Like,
yeah.
If he comes in and he's a 37% three-point shooter next year, then all of a sudden, like, the options just really open up. But I think that that's the correct way to go. Jalen Green, I think, is someone that probably has a higher ceiling than anyone they have, but he is still a rookie. So I think he would be slotting into what the Kevin Porter Jr. role would have been, where he's going to be taking all of the backup 2 minutes. Maybe that means Sexton plays kind of more as the backup point guard and eats a lot of those minutes. Maybe sometime at the three, probably slots Okoro as a three, basically full time, rather than playing him minutes at the two, which seemed to work at the end of the season. But it just, that's probably the way you'd have to go in order to get all of those guys the minutes that they deserve.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you right off the rip that I think either of them would be coming off the bench to start. I think if it's Barnes that you need, you immediately start looking into moving one or both of your power forwards. Though I would sure love to keep I get the reasons you trade Larry, but trading Larry makes me queasy. I just really, really like him.
Oh, buddy. I'd hate it so much. Friend of the pod.
And like, I wouldn't love that. But I do think that decision precipitates making a call on one of your power forwards. Mm-hmm. But either way, I imagine both come off the bench unless, and this is kind of like the way we like to do things between me and you, is always like, you come off the bench if you're a kid, unless you're so good that you earn it. And I don't think the Cavs have always done that. I think that's a critical point for me, mm-hmm. where I would say you haven't always made them earn it. You know, Colin got handed starting minutes before he was ready.
Yeah,
Darius, when he was still working his way back, you know, they went with Sexland right off the rip.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that they've always done that. But
it's a little easier to do that when the guys you are starting them over are top picks.
Exactly. Now you're moving into this. I was just about to get there where you're now at the point where if you're benching someone, you're benching Larry Nance or Kevin Love or Colin Sexton. And those are dudes you're not going to be quick to bench. So it actually allows you to kind of bring these guys along at an appropriate pace. Now, again, we would love it. No one ever is going to, I don't think this podcast will ever, ever be upset if the player that is better gets to start. You know?
No.
So if they did draft Jalen Green and he was better than Colin Sexton and the lineups were better and it made more sense, go nuts. But, you know, neither of us really think that's likely in year one or at least the first couple months of year one.
That would be a hell of an accomplishment. Like, that would be a hell of an accomplishment if day one you are that good.
Yeah. So to that end, like, you know, I think both would come off the bench, and I think that the Cavs would kind of play it slow with either of them.
Yeah, it'd be like what happened with LaMelo Ball in Charlotte, right? He came off the bench, and then at one point it just became so obvious that he deserved a starting role, and they gave it to him. And you never know, right? Like, it may change with whatever leaps these guys take. I think that was one of the criticisms that I saw on Twitter as well when Kobe compared this rebuild to the Hawks, which I didn't find as egregious because I've been doing that all year. even when we had Brad Rowland on the podcast, that was a big part of the premise of having him on, was the Hawks seem to be that team that's a year ahead. And no, they don't have the cap space to add a Danilo Gallinari or Bogdanovich, but they do have
a Chris Dunn and a Rajon.
Oh my God.
Sorry, that was mean.
That was mean, but I did need that laugh. But I do think that there's some parallels. Like, I think one of the biggest reasons the Hawks took a leap was internal growth, full season of Clint Capella, healthy. I think that's kind of what you're hoping for with Jared Allen. And you hope that Darius Garland continues what we saw in April. Kobe made it very clear that they were insanely high with what they saw from him. If the 20-7, 20-8 that we saw, 21-8 that we saw in April is who Garland is, and that's his new floor, that's going to change the calculus.
Hey, can I tell you one thing?
Mm-hmm.
I liked that Kobe was clearly annoyed that they didn't, that their backcourt didn't shoot more threes.
Yes. and that was a good point, because like, a lot of this improvement is going to need to come internally. And I understand if you aren't a believer in this young core, you're not going to believe what he's selling. You're not going to buy what he's selling. It's very possible that he's wrong. It's very possible that I'm wrong, but I'm going to be loud wrong because I feel like I've been right every step up to this point. And I'm not someone that always just blindly agrees with what the Cavs do. I hated the Sexton pick. I hated the Waiters pick. I hated the Bennett pick. Like, I wasn't a huge fan of the Bayline hire. Like, I've just liked the process up until this point, but I do think that there has to be that sense of urgency going into this year. And personally, like, while we're on the subject of things that we might like and not like, if Kobe Altman isn't back next season, I'm going to be really disappointed. Like, that would be something that would really, really bum me out. Now, I was depressed as hell when David Griffin wasn't extended. He hasn't worked out in New Orleans for him so far. The moves haven't been great. Kobe ended up being a great...
Dumping number four for two mid-firsts.
Ooh,
yeah. Come on, Griff.
Yeah, passing up on Garland, Zion, pick and rolls is...
Or even Hunter.
Yeah.
He's the perfect wing for them.
Not a choice I'd make. And, like, there's...
Hey, just wanted one more look at him.
That is such a niche reference. I love it. But like, I wouldn't know how to evaluate what a replacement would be, if it's an improvement or not, but I just would hate the process. Like, I really want to see Kobe to get another year to see this through and to try to bring it all together and make that leap to the playoffs. I would just be very disappointed if that didn't come to fruition. I think what he's done to this point in accumulating this young core, which I'm high on and some might not be, but I do think that it's enough to warrant another year for sure.
I mean, I know we'll eventually have the Kobe conversation in full, but I do kind of want to just hit on it. Like, if they were to move on, which I agree with you, I would not agree with that decision, especially at this point. Like, I do believe that you got to rip the Band-Aid off quick with personnel decisions. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if they did make this move, I don't want, if they are, you know, going to have that kind of conversation, like, you got to have it before draft, free agency, et cetera, so you can plan. But I, you know, if there is something to gripe about, it's probably the blow-ups, the you know, sending three or four players home is not something that you normally see in healthy orgs. It happens, but you don't see it that often. The KBJ thing was ugly. The Drummond thing was a bummer. And, you know, I do think that he finally kind of, he did his press conference, and I do think that there was a lot of talk about how often he was talking to the media.
Where do you fall on that? Sorry to cut you off, but
so I was going to get there, actually.
Yeah, so it was 4 months since his last time speaking to the media, which I don't think is that abnormal for general managers, but I guess with the number of things that occurred for the Cavs, I think some people would want to see more of him rather than just a statement through the team. Where did you fall on that?
I think that, you know, you can't just compare GM to GM because every org is different. Mm-hmm. But I think that the reason I want to hear more from Kobe is if I'm a fan or a media member is I still don't know exactly what he believes in, you know, and giving kind of like he can control the narrative a little better if he talks to folks a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's kind of where I go where it's like I don't even care if he should or shouldn't. It would just help me as a fan to understand where the team is going and what direction they're building in, you know. And in fairness to Kobe, it's not like he's gonna lay out. It's like the when Will Arnett had his cameo in The Office where he had a 10-point plan to triple the company's product. Like he's not gonna give the viewing public or the media exactly what we want to hear. Like it's gonna be a political exercise, as they often are, but you find snippets when you have these kind of things. And I feel like I know Kobe and his plan for this team a little bit better than I did 2 days ago.
Yeah, I do as well.
And again, I'll just say this. If you don't control the narrative can control you. And that's why I think he should talk more, not because he has some obligation. I think it would behoove him and the organization. But like ultimately, am I sitting here like grinding my teeth furious that he hasn't talked once a month? No, because again, it is a political exercise. But I do think there's value in it. And it was nice to have as a fan. I'll say that. It was nice to have. It was nice to hear from him and try to kind of figure out where he feels this team is going.
Yeah, it definitely was nice. I'm glad that it was as long as it was. Like, he sat there and answered every single question. We buried the lead, but this was my first press conference attending as well, so that was kind of fun to get some questions in there.
Of course, he'll never know what media outlet you represent because you didn't say it.
Oh. Yeah, I know. That was my one mistake. I
was... It's okay, Justin. I still love you. You're like, Justin Rowan, who the hell is that?
You know what? That would have been a great reaction to get.
I would have loved that if you said, who do you work for?
I think we would have had to work that into the intro. We really would have had to work that into the intro. Justin Rowan, who the hell are you?
Can we work some of our organization sources to have them just like have Kobe roast us on the next presser?
Doesn't even have to come on a call with us. I'd love it, but like he doesn't have to do that.
We'll just hop into the next presser, and he can say something mean. We'll put it in the intro. It'd be great. But he was super polite, so of course he would never call you out, but I would.
Yeah, and I think your point's good as well about like you're never going to get like full transparency on what the plan's going to be.
Also, nor should we. That would be stupid.
No, like, no. I think Twitter would be roasting him if that was the case, where he starts outlining which players he's looking to trade, what the plan would be if they fell in the draft, on whether or not they want to like trade up. Like that would be absolutely insane to say out loud. But I do think that you still learn some stuff from it. Like I thought that he answered some questions that were really interesting. I think we got a better idea of how he feels about the young core. The fact that he views them all as long-term fits. Now, I don't think that Kobe is someone, when you look at the track record, that will ever let an existing player get in the way of a better option. Like we saw that with the Darius Garland draft decision. We saw that with Jared Allen becoming available and changing the calculus of what they were planning to do with Andre Drummond. Like I think they're still going to go best player available, whether it be draft, free agency, or trade. But they there is an understanding of, hey, we want this young core to take the next step. We want to see how they perform on the playoff stage. Are guys going to struggle when the game changes in the playoffs? That's stuff we don't know, and that's really important stuff when you're looking at team building. So I do think that trying to supplement the young core, trying to get those pieces around them, needs to be a priority.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. You know, it does feel like he's pretty committed to these four dudes and is going to try to find ways to help them. And
sorry to cut you off again.
No, you're good.
one thing that I think is really encouraging is this doesn't feel like an Orlando Magic situation where they drafted guys at the same position year after year after year. Like, all their draft capital is basically tied up in power forwards and centers. It's not a situation like that. Like, these guys fit together. And
yeah, I mean, and to varying degrees of success. But, you know, ultimately, I think where the Magic concerns are coming, I don't think most people thought the Magic did a terrible job building their team. I don't think that's been the narrative. Is that, you know, and maybe I'm just thinking about Zach Lowe too much, because he's talked about this quite a bit, where it's like, they picked people who made sense in good spots, and they didn't hit. Like, they got on base, but they didn't hit doubles or triples.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're worried about this Cavs core right now, I think it would be the reason to be concerned, if you are, which I'm not, would be that they're hitting singles.
Yeah.
And it's hard to build a contender hitting singles.
Yeah.
Especially a young contender, even just to make the playoffs. Like, if you got a bunch of solid, okay role players, and they're all 22, you're probably going to win 22 games.
Yeah, no, it's true. And, like, maybe you don't get a massive leap from one of these players, but four of them making smaller leaps is going to make a big difference. Like, the Darius Garland and Colin Sexton we saw at the end of the year was better than they were at the start of the season. They improved throughout the year. Same goes for Isaac Okoro. You hope that Jared Allen continues to improve, assuming that he's part of the core, which seems very likely. One question, though, relating to the core. Michael had asked, if we see Okoro as a long-term part of this team, if Sexton is extended and this team lands a pick in the top four or five, let's say top four, because I think we're on the same page that we view tier one and two as the top four picks.
So here's the thing about that. He might phase his way out of the core if things break wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Where if the jumper doesn't get there and the Cavs add talent that is not particularly well-fitting with him and they pop off,
yeah,
then he can fall out of the what you would consider the core four or five players on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't foresee him falling out of like this team's plans, because you can always use guys like that.
Oh yeah.
Like probably the worst case scenario for Isaac after a year of watching him play for me is like a ninth or 10th man. Mm-hmm. I think his worst case career scenario is like Corey Brewer.
Yeah.
Where it's like the defense wasn't ever quite as locked down as you wanted it to be. And the jumper never got quite there, but every now and again he had some big moments where he looked really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's kind of his floor. And Corey Brewer's in the league for like 12, 13 years.
I
may be overselling that by a year or two, but point is, he was around.
Yeah, and I want to pick nits with that, but like it's not.
I'm going wide angle here. I'm not saying he's the same player. I'm saying like that's kind of the trajectory that I think is kind of his basement. So like, I don't see any reason why Isaac Okoro is out of this team's rotation, pretty much no matter who they pick. I just think he might be less integral to their future, depending on who they pick. Like, to your point, like if you're worried about him and Scottie Barnes, and Scottie Barnes gets picked and Barnes goes nuts and becomes this Pascal Siakam on offense and this destroyer of worlds on defense, then and Isaac's jumper isn't coming along, then okay, yep, that makes sense that he might become a little less integral to what they're doing. But even if that happens, I don't see him just not mattering on this team or being part of this team's plans.
Yeah, I don't know if there is necessarily any pick that's really going to push guys out of the rotation. Like, even let's say you end up at four and you take Jalen Suggs because he's the best player available and you don't want to reach a tier down for fifth. Like, that is probably the most uncomfortable spot. But even then, if Garland and Sexton are playing 32 minutes a night, there are backup spots for both of them. 16 minutes available. You can get another 32 minutes there, right?
Like, yeah.
It's really uncomfortable, and we'll get...
That's the most uncomfortable.
That is your peak uncomfortable, in my opinion. Like that's
Andre Drummond and Jared Allen in the same center room uncomfortable.
Right.
I think that one is actually approaching untenable.
Yeah. Actually, so let's just go there because we're already here. Luca in the Discord had asked what we would do at four if Cade, Mobley, and Green were off the board.
I don't think I'm a good person to answer this question because I haven't watched enough Suggs because I'm not super interested in him as a prospect. So I haven't probably done my appropriate amount of homework.
That's fair.
From what I've seen though, so, you know, couching it with that. So, you know, don't hold me too accountable, gang. From what I've seen, he kind of seems like a high floor, low ceiling guy or a medium ceiling guy. I don't think no one seems to be telling me superstar. That I hear from him, it's like he's going to be a really good guard for a long time in the league. And it's like I already feel like I got a couple of those. So to me, I am inclined to see what I can get for the pick.
That's exactly what I would do. The first thing I do is put that on the trade market. Like, hey, let's find out what's going on. How happy?
And I know trading out of a four player draft at pick four is like is a tough look, but I don't think it's a four player draft. I think tier three has at least one or two people who are going to pop in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cavs just have to figure out who it is. But yeah, I'm taking calls, I think, or I'm trying to call, or if I'm reading the tea leaves and I see Green off the board, coming off the board, I'm trying to go up and get him.
Yeah. I think you look to trade up. You look to see, hey, is someone willing to short the Cavs stock and they can trade a future first? Maybe it's top three protected, but a team is willing to trade back two spots to go, like you still get Jalen Suggs. Maybe you need a point guard and this feels like the best way to use your assets. That's possible. I mean, we've seen trade ups.
Well, yeah, the Atlanta Hawks and Dallas Mavericks. That is the template here in a lot of ways.
Right. The last year's draft is basically the only time we haven't seen a team trade up because nobody wanted to trade. Like Brian Windhorst reported the Timberwolves were trying to trade the first overall pick right to the last second before they picked Anthony Edwards. Like there wasn't an appetite to move those picks, like, or to move up. And we saw it the year before. Four player draft, the Pelicans trade back their pick. The Luka pick got traded back. Like I think that there's a possibility for that. The other option would be trading out. What does the fourth pick and some of the assets the Cavs have, what does that get you on the open market? Like I would look, honestly, I'd approach
just say Brandon Ingram if you want.
Yeah, no, I was going to get there. I was going to say, whether it's the first round pick this year or Larry Nance, I'm not trading it like just for kind of future draft capital. Like I'm not trading back. We'll get a later lottery pick and maybe a second first round pick. Like that's not of interest to me. If you're trading Nance, if you're trading the pick, like I would want something proven. I would try to go all in for Brandon Ingram. I would try to go in all in for another second year contract type guy if they're on the market. Now, that type of player might not be available on the market. We don't know. But I would certainly be taking calls for number four because it's just so uncomfortable. And while I think Suggs is possibly a better prospect than the guys we have, I don't know if it's enough to justify giving up on one of them. Like that would be my real big concern. And
this is one of those spots where it's not just take Suggs and trade guy. It's take Suggs and the whole league knows you need a trade guy.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that dampens the value you get back. It just doesn't feel like the right choice to me. Unless you, and if you are someone who is not as high on either Darius or Colin as we are, then yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Just take Suggs and figure it out.
And the same applies to the front office. Like they could say one thing and they feel differently. They may feel that, like some people feel that. Tier two is actually five players deep, that they're very high on Kuminga or some other player, and they feel comfortable taking that player at four.
Yeah.
So we're not draft people. We're not great at this.
We're not draft people. But point is, I think both of us are not super interested in leaving this draft with Jalen Suggs, and it has very little to do with Jalen Suggs, mm-hmm. and as much and much more to do with just situational decision making. And I think you can get a really nice haul for a pick like that, but the Cavs would need to be very. I don't want to take a bad haul. I don't want to just take a bevy of future firsts for my trouble.
Jackson Hayes and Nikhil Alexander Walker.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not interested in that. I would rather have Suggs than that. But if I can trade out or trade or package him and trade up or trade for a good asset back to kind of push this team up a level, then sure. Mm-hmm. But it would be a challenging and an unfortunate situation if that were the case. And let's all just cross our fingers that Jalen Suggs is third off the board if the Cavs are picking fourth.
That would be great. And again, like trading up might be a possible option if it's just one or two spots. Like I think that would be something that's worthwhile to explore. The other part of this question from Luca, and we'll try to get through all these. We only have one more question after this. Who our favorite prospect is outside of the top four?
It's Scotty for me, man. I see a smart player. I see a dog. I see another hard worker. You go watch his highlight. Go watch a scouting report. Him picking up point guards full court and clapping in their faces is exactly the kind of try hard crap I'm into right now.
I do not understand the criticisms of his athleticism. Like,
I just don't think he's a. Maybe he's not. I don't know. I don't get it. He feels like he moves very fluidly to me.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I think if you're worried, it's the stat line. The stat line sucks, but that every Florida State player's stat line sucks. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than Patrick Williams last year. That's for sure. And like,
yeah, who was a project, by the way. But, you know, I just think he fits so well. And I just like the idea of building this annoying team that nobody wants to play.
Clamps.
And I feel like, yeah.
Clamps, gifts for days, buddy.
Yeah. That's all I would be doing. So, I like Scotty. How about you?
I do too. Like what I was saying earlier about him being that second unit playmaker and point guard. Like honestly, because Florida State didn't really have a point guard and he almost ran that position from the power forward. That you'd still add a backup point guard, but you might not use up as much capital. You might not use your full mid-level exception on a backup point guard because all of a sudden, hey. Colin Sexton showed improved passing. We got Scotty Barnes that can also help run those second unit minutes because Sexton currently is playing all of those second unit minutes, and you hope that could be enough. Maybe Jetty Osmond's playing some playmaking there too, but it should be enough to make that a more functional lineup, and I just think he brings so much to the table too. Like, if he's handling playmaking and Sexton is improved as a passer, Scotty Barnes is also covering for him defensively. Like, that is really exciting.
All I want is smart players.
Oh, he's
Scotty
smart.
Barnes seems like a smart player. That is all it is.
So DH in our Discord had asked us who our favorite
the Scold Lord himself.
He scolds you. I think we got a good rapport going on.
I love you, DH.
One of my favorites. He mentioned or he asked what possible additions would fit Kobe's description of adding length, shooting, and athleticism that could supplement the young core. I think the shortest answer before we get into some of these guys is you're not going to address all three of those needs. You probably have to kind of pick and choose because guys that do all of that aren't really available. That's a big part of why I always say, like,
you know,
pick
really,
a forward.
He's got a lot of length, shooting, athleticism. Paul George, Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. Like, that is why you use draft capital on a forward over a guard if the option is available. Because even if you hit, even if you get, like, the apex guard, even if you get a Steph Curry, once you go further in the rounds of the playoffs, you're going up against a Damian Lillard, you're going up against a Kyrie, you're going up against all these guys. Like, the replacement value is so high and there's so many stars. You draft a forward if they're available. So I don't think anyone's going to address all of these needs. But guys like maybe Reggie Bullock, Torrey Craig, Mick Buckets gives you shooting, but not so much the other things. Otto Porter Jr.
I think Dougie McBuckets is great if you're the Cavs and you might be rightly concerned that Dylan Windler isn't going to be it for the short term.
Mm-hmm.
Because McBuckets is a guy, and I think you said this on the last pod. Forgive me if I'm just straight up stealing your take. If I'm interested in Duncan Robinson, you're like, don't pay him. Go chase Dougie McBuckets for a quarter of the price because he doesn't have Heat culture slapped on his stupid back of his jersey. So like that guy makes sense for me. And again, I don't know if this guy addresses any of those things, but TJ McConnell is my
pick. I left him for you.
Love TJ McConnell for this team in free agency. He is such a smart player. He's Delly. If Delly had a, he's younger Delly. He might be the best stealing guard in NBA history. Like, I've never seen someone who rips dudes like this. He's such a vicious point of attack defender.
Cavs fans have no examples of that, Carter. They have no examples of him getting 9 steals in the first half.
Yeah, first quarter basically. a guy who can be a real example setter. Like, if we're talking culture, man, like, mm-hmm. this is a culture setter, and he and his teams are always pretty good.
Yeah.
And his minutes are good despite, I love guys who are weird and succeed despite obvious drawbacks. Like, this guy can't shoot at all.
Yeah.
And he's really not a great finisher either. Like, he is not a scorer by any means, but just by being super smart, super cagey and in unbelievable condition, he helps his teams win. And I just think the Cavs, like, when I watch the Cavs right now, I see dudes with skill sets. Garland's skill set is amazing. Collins' skill set is amazing. Jared is the prototypical rim rolling big, and rim protector. They need guys who can teach the kids how to make winning plays on a regular basis.
Can you imagine?
I think TJ McConnell fits that bill.
Could you imagine if, let's say it is Scottie Barnes that's the pick? Like, I think TJ McConnell becomes a guy that if you draft a front court player or a wing, that becomes a much more viable option. But, like, let's imagine it is Scottie Barnes, and you got TJ McConnell, Colin Sexton, Torian Prince, Scottie Barnes, and Hardenstein as your second unit. Like, you have so much passing, you have so much defense, and Sexton can just eat. Like, I think when you're looking at this season, and this was something that Kobe mentioned as well, because the first question I asked Kobe was, how do you evaluate how far you are away from the playoffs when you're looking to make that step and you don't have a lot of data points? Like, this season was so weird. There were so many injuries. The scheduling's all messed up.
Before we move off McConnell, can I mention one thing?
Go ahead.
Roberto LeBron in the YouTube chat just said, TJ is perfect. He gets steals. Sexton and Okoro run fast for points. And it's actually very accurate. Like, and if you're looking for ways to juice this offense, we saw early in the season when Nance and Drummond were just fast-handsing their ways to, forcing 100 deflections a game, mm-hmm. that the Cavs were able to get buckets by running in transition.
That has to be a priority next year, is getting that pace up. Get that pace way up, because Garland needs to take more threes, Sexton needs to take more threes, and they need to get out and run. Like, it is egregious looking at this season that the Cavs were actually slower when Garland and Sexton play together. Like, Garland on his own was faster, and that shouldn't be the case. Like, those are your change of pace running backs, basically. Like, get out there, run, take advantage of that. But getting back to what I had asked Kobe about, which was how far away they are from the playoffs, he acknowledged we don't really have a ton of data points because these guys had so many injuries. The supporting cast wasn't really there, but they do have a lot of data points on the young core. So that is going to be the focus of getting guys healthier next year to support them, filling out the rotation, replacing the second unit, because I think the data that we do have on the young core is they play well together, especially when they have spacing. That was a lineup that worked. It made sense. It worked. But the second unit wasn't great. And too many times this season, the second unit became the first unit because of injuries. So I think a more normal season, a healthier year, the young core taking a leap, adding another talented piece in the draft. Like, you look at the Atlanta Hawks as an example, or the New York Knicks. Those are teams that won a combined 41 games last year, and they won 41 games each. And they did that without their draft pick this year contributing. Like, I think we're still high on Okongwu long-term, but he didn't do anything. Obi Toppin did nothing for the Knicks this season. If the Cavs can't make the free agency splashes those teams made, they can have the internal growth. Larry Nance Jr. only missing 9 games like he did last year instead of 37. That is a bigger free agency addition than anything that they've had. And if you're getting quality contributions,
you're not asking Larry Nance to be completely healthy.
No.
Asking him to miss 10 games.
Right. And we maybe got 20 healthy games out of him. Like 15 of those were messed up. So him playing more games, actually getting contributions from the draft picks, getting the leaps that you anticipate from the young core, that could close the gap. Like, a lot of the times when we make comparisons to other teams, we're not saying it's going to follow the exact same script, the same set of events. It's just a model. It's just an example of how the unexpected can happen and situations where that's worked. Every single player is different. This is why player comps are always going to be flawed.
Yeah, shout out to Todd, who just barged into the office and knocked the door open. So we better wrap soon because it's bedtime routine. So, Todd, yep, there she is, hollering.
Millie's crying. Todd is breaking into the office, and Noodles is scratching on my door for dinner. So
Classic nudes.
I got to go take care of the nudes. Hope you guys are taking care of yourself as well. I anticipate Tuesday's podcast will be probably a little more playoff focused, but you never know. There's always seems to be Cavs updates to go through, so maybe we'll do that. Thank you so much to all of our listeners that support sent in questions. A reminder that you guys can send in questions anytime you want to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we'd be more than happy to work those into an episode. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe, because it's the best way to help us show up in the algorithms. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe. Help cook those books. And if you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cats.